Welcome to the Health and Self-Care podcast. I'm Dr. Kate Staveley, a GP from Somerset, and today I'm joined by my friend and colleague,
Dr. Andrew Tresetta, another GP from Somerset.
And today's topic of conversation is something that's fairly unusual and something we've not talked about before, and that is sex and love addiction. And our guest, Livy. Livy, could you introduce yourself, please, and explain why you're here?
Yeah, absolutely. So my name's Livy. I'm an actress. I live in London, but originally from North Somerset. And I've been in recovery for sex and love addiction for 2 years. And previously to that, I'd had some trouble with my mental health for years, I'd say half of my life. And it's kind of the one thing that's helped me more than anything, really, being in recovery for sex and love addiction.
And so when you say sex and love addiction, what did that look like for you?
So pre-recovery, I experienced obsession. That could be with ex-partners. It could be with people that I want to pursue. Generally, it would happen after rejection or when I was feeling rejection, the obsession would happen. It would lead me to feeling suicidal, self-harming, and I did attempt to take my life as well once. And I didn't realise that that was what was driving it. I knew that my relationships were always really chaotic, really, really deep. Every other aspect of my life would just take the back seat because the most important thing was the person I was obsessed with. And I lost myself and became about the other person. And I had very low self-esteem.
And how old were you when you first realized this was a problem?
I tried to take my life on my 19th birthday or just before my 19th birthday. And I realized that, yeah, this relationships are the thing that is having the most effect on my mental health. However, I didn't know anything about SLA, about sex and love addiction at that point. I didn't actually hear about SLA until I was 29, so 10 years later, which is, on one hand, you know, I'm sad for my past self that I hadn't discovered it sooner. But the driving thing for me is just gratitude for being in the program and for knowing that I'm not going to go through that again. You know, I've had slips. I haven't always been my recovery's not been perfect. No one really ever is. But it's not got to the point where I'm in active addiction again. And I'm just so grateful for that.
Livy, you mentioned that you had low self-esteem. Was that something that had always been from childhood and through teenage years? Or was it something that came on later on?
Yeah, no, I think I... maybe not when I was as a child, but certainly sort of from maybe the age of 12 and up, I had always kind of not expected very much from myself and had feelings of sort of self-loathing and not feeling good enough, I think is the big thing. I think that was especially when I became interested in boys. I would always go for someone unobtainable and I would put so much energy into a relationship that didn't exist. There was a lot of fantasy, a lot of, you know, pining over a boy who didn't even know my name. And that kind of happened from the age of 12 and that definitely had a knock on my self-esteem. Yeah, absolutely.
That's really interesting because three of our primary needs are to feel safe, to feel loved and to feel in control. And as children, if we're fortunate, on the whole, we're quite lucky and many of us will have had that to a greater or lesser degree. But once we become teenagers, life gets much more difficult and complicated, as you say. And we have hormonal changes, but we grow away from our parents. We're becoming an adolescent, moving towards being an adult. And where do we find our security? Where do we fulfill that need to be loved? And how do we feel in control? Are those relevant areas to what happened over the next few years for you?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think that, to be honest, throughout my teenage years, I didn't feel that kind of need for control, and I just kind of got on with it, and I was very comfortable being in the back, you know, in the shadows, like admiring someone from a distance. I didn't need to be seen. It wasn't until I met my partner when I was 18, and he liked me back, and that was what threw me. That was the real issue for me, was I was so very confused about why I was good enough for him, and I just didn't believe it, and I absolutely sabotaged my relationship with him sort of from the inside out, and it was very, very messy. And then ultimately that's the one that I ended, and ended up dropping out of university and ended up taking an overdose. And it was all just very, very confusing. I think I don't have a relationship with my father either, and I think that's a huge part of it. I don't feel any resentment towards him anymore, and my life is so much more peaceful without him in it. But I am aware that it definitely had a big effect on my teenage years. And I know that I, like a lot of people, will identify with that. And I know it's such a cliche, you know, a girl who doesn't have a relationship with her father finding relationships hard to navigate, but it's a cliche for a reason. And I think it's really important to realize that we're not defined by our relationships with our parents, and that you can build healthy relationships eventually.
And do you think that your lack of self-esteem impacted on other areas of your life, or was it only around relationships?
Oh, no, absolutely. Well, relationships did took center stage for me. But it that then had a knock-on effect on everything else. You know, I failed my first year of university, ended up dropping out, which now I'm absolutely grateful for, because it wasn't for me. I've done absolutely fine without a degree. But yeah, and then I find that when I'm not obsessing over someone, I'm so much more productive in my career. I work with kids as well. You know, I'm so much more focused on that. My interpersonal relationships, you know, with family and friends are so much more healthy. And above all else, I found that self-care is something that I've really put first in the past couple of years since I've been in the program, and that's like, I'm so grateful for that, and I genuinely care about myself, and I think it's had such a positive impact on my self-esteem, and I feel like a whole person for the first time. Yeah.
Excellent. Life is about learning, and sometimes we keep repeating the lessons, and I can certainly think of life lessons where I've had to sort of make the same mistakes time and time and time again before eventually I woke up, as it were. For you, how long did it take? How many years or months did it take to work out that there was something that you could do positively forwards, that there was an issue of repeating behaviour?
So I think I realised when I was about 25 that I was the problem. I'd always had, you know, after my big relationship breakdown, I'd always had kind of very short, quite toxic relationships. And I remember I was dating someone and he got someone else pregnant, which is obviously very horrible. I broke it off, decided that was it. You know, if it can't be a healthy relationship, I don't want it. And I, you know, great, that's who I want to be. But then unfortunately a year later I decided to get back together with him, and I realized how insane that was. You know, that's not a healthy decision to make. You know, what's wrong with me that I'm seeking validation from someone who just simply cannot give it to me? But I still didn't know about SLA at that point, and I found it I found myself quite ashamed of it as well for doing these things. You know, I felt like if, like going to see counsellors, going to therapists, having, you know, assessments done, I would never talk about that side of things. There was always other things going on. There was always, you know, it was always my dad to talk about. There was always, you know, life events, losing people, grief to talk about. And that made sense to me. It didn't make sense why I was so desperately, desperately unhappy because of my relationship with men. And yeah, that was when I realized there's something wrong with me. And I kind of, I tried to change my behavior, you know, to pick different people, to go for different types of people. And it didn't work. I still kept, it just meant that the relationships were getting shorter and it was happening in such a more condensed amount of time. It was 3 weeks and I could always tell you exactly when the relationship would break down because it was always 3 weeks and I don't know why, just always, but yeah.
And how did you discover Schlar? How did you find out that that was what the problem was?
So I was very, very lucky in that a friend had come up to London to see me and I had inadvertently had a one night stand the night before. And I was talking to him about it and he mentioned to me that he was in Schlar and talked me through it. And I'd never thought about it as addiction, right? Absolutely, as soon as he said to me, look, it's addiction for validation, for fantasy, for all of these things. You are using sex to get love or the other way around, you know? And I was like, a light bulb went off. I was like, this is it. This is exactly what I've needed. And he said, it's a 12-step program, you know, like in AA, like in NA. It follows the same structure. You do these 12 steps and you will be okay. And it is true. I know, you know, there was some skepticism when I went in, but knowing that I had this almost checklist of things to do and a higher power to tell me that it would work, it was life-changing for me. And I did find that kind of that idea of a higher power quite difficult to understand at first. I've never been religious. I've always referred to myself as an atheist. But I think that is one of the most important things for me through this program was finding, I don't want to say God, but essentially, yeah, a higher power, you know, knowing there's something bigger than yourself, you know, even if it's the planet, right? We're all made of the same stuff. We all come from the planet. We all go back into it. And just knowing that I don't have to have control out of every single thing that I do, you know, other things happen to me. My only real responsibility is how I react to the things that happen to me. I can't control those things. And that's just, you know, I've heard that before, but until coming into this program, like coming in was the thing that made me truly believe it. And it has really saved me.
And so is the program quite structured the way it works?
Yeah. Yeah. So there's, you know, there's a few different ways you can do it. So you can do it as they would in AA. So there's an AA book, Alcoholics Anonymous book. You can do it that way, just changing the words to sex and love addiction instead of alcohol throughout the book. Or the way that I've done it is the how way. So honest, open and willing, and you answer questions. And it's really thorough. And I found it just reminds me every day that I am an addict and I need to hand every day over to my higher power and to just know that, to trust that people aren't out to get me and trust that I am a perfectly valid person as I am.
You clearly are, definitely. Do you think that sex and love addiction are the same as alcohol addiction, gambling addiction? And do you think people who have problems with different forms of addiction are the same person, it's just they've got a different addiction? Or do you think they're all very different?
I think that's a really good question, because I think I do, you know, have a sponsor and sponsees within the program, and I do always say that it is different in that, you know, if you're an alcoholic, you have one bottom line, and that is you do not drink. If you're a gambling addict, you have one bottom line, and that is you do not gamble. In sex and love addiction, everyone's bottom lines are different. Everyone has different behaviors that they need to avoid. So for me, a huge one for me is not arguing. But where, you know, and then like someone's might be, it could be not having sex at all, or it could be not having, you know, extramarital sex, you know, that could be an issue for someone, but everyone's a different. So it's a little bit harder to kind of, to work through, and it's not as, it's definitely not as strict as AA. So for instance, you know, in AA, you don't drink. And then if you do, you go back to the beginning and you start again, right? In SLA, you don't, if you have a slip, like for instance, it could be looking up someone on social media, right? That's, you know, it's just a random example, not necessarily my bottom line behaviors. But if you do that, you kind of, you and your sponsor kind of look at it and go, right, how bad was that behavior? Has that meant that you've slipped now back into active addiction? Or was that, you know, was that a one-off? Are you going to go back to the beginning and work with a different sponsor? Or are you going to answer these questions on why you slipped and why you still need the program? And generally, you know, unless it's continuous bottom line behavior, you just work through it with the same sponsor and you continue from where you are. Because it really is about self-love, and I'm grateful for my slips. You know, they've gotten less harmful every time, you know, like in the beginning, it felt really horrible. And I felt like the self-esteem just went straight down because I slipped. Whereas now, you know, I have had slips and I'm okay. I'm like, okay, done that. And now I move on and I just start again and I'm okay and I know I can. So I am grateful for those moments of weakness, actually.
Really interesting. Thank you. And just picking up what Kate was asking about the different types of addiction. There are many activities that we have that fulfill a need, and maybe we don't all need to drink alcohol, or we don't need to gamble, although perhaps risk-taking is something that's inbuilt in us. But when it comes to our sexuality and relationships with other people, as social creatures, as social beings, human beings, that's quite a challenge to, if I say the words, open inverted commas, get it right, close inverted commas, it isn't about right or wrong. It's about getting it in balance for who we are as we are, and maturing to a place where we don't either damage ourselves or we don't damage other people. So where does respect come into that? Where does love, and I don't mean the romantic need for love, but love, particularly self-love, come into that?
Yeah, I mean, the whole way through, to be honest, that is kind of the goal of the program, I'd say. One of the things that we always say is God is in the pause. So, you know, however you view God, but about responding to things and not reacting, that's something that I've always struggled with. I would be overwhelmed with emotion and act on it straight away. But my go-to now is if I'm feeling that overwhelm, I will ring my sponsor and talk about it with her before I then go and talk it through with whoever I've got a problem with. And that's, yeah, the respect for them, but also the respect for myself. I'm not burning bridges anymore. I genuinely, and if I have ended, I haven't dated within the last 2 years, but I have had sort of friendships that I've decided don't serve me and are not healthy for me, and I've respectfully ended those. And yeah, from a place where I'm not going to accuse them of things. I can't change their behavior. All I can do is decide whether I want them in my life or not. And yeah, and then maybe it'll change one day, but it just gives me the opportunity to keep, you know, leave it open-ended and to be respectful to that person. And yeah, that's obviously that is respect towards them, but it's respect towards myself too, because I've not then, towards my future self, I've not then, you know, yeah, burnt bridges for myself in the future.
And how do you think long-term relationships are going to work out after this course?
I have no idea, and that's okay. So that's one of the big things, is that, you know, I kind of always been seeking a relationship. Just to give you some context, I've been single for 9 years. And, you know, the last two have been happily single. But before that, it's always been very frustrating that I've not been able to meet someone. And I absolutely, you know, understand that, you know, as a woman in her 30s, some people my age might worry about, you know, having children and things in the future, and whether that's a possibility. That's not a worry for me. Thankfully, I'm really grateful for that. But I don't know what my higher power's plan is for me, and whether that means that there is a long-term relationship in the future, or whether I'm supposed to be alone, but I've got to a place where I'm absolutely fine on my own. And if it doesn't happen, it doesn't happen. If it does, it does. And I'm not trying to control that. Within the program, it's not, you know, it's not a case of you come in, you don't date. If you're already, some people come in already in a relationship, and it's, you know, you do have a withdrawal period where you avoid contact for 30 days in the beginning, which is really helpful just to sort of reset yourself. But then you get to step nine. So step nine is making amends. And that was one of the most transformative steps for me. I just felt after that that I was a blank slate. I could start again and live my life well and healthily without this like lingering feeling of all of those people that I'd shouted at, or all of the, you know, yeah, all of the kind of negative behaviors that I'd done. And then you kind of look at it, and you work through with your sponsor and with other fellows, and kind of look at how you can manage your relationships in a really healthy way. So it is a possibility. It's not like, you know, it's not like you come into AA and you don't drink. You know, it's about having healthy relationships, and really you're starting with your relationship with yourself.
Libby, that's very powerful. You alluded earlier on to the fact that you'd been having some therapy for a while, but it took quite a long time to actually work out what was going on and even to mention this. And probably shame is one of the deepest emotions that we feel that holds us back from engaging or asking for help. Sometimes it's subconscious. I don't know what you think about that. And then I've got a question to follow on from that.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I think one of the things that I hear a lot from newcomers in SLA is their therapist had sent them to SLA. And I first started having therapy when I was 16. I had been rejected by a boy who was a bit older than me. And I was very, very sad about it. And I did not talk to my therapist about that at all. And then again, when I attempted to take my life when I was 19, I had therapy again. And although I did talk about that, I very much framed it as there's a lot going on. And there was. But the, you know, the main thing was my relationship breakdown. And I did feel some resentment towards the fact that I'd never been signposted towards SLA from a therapist. I think this, but ultimately it comes down to two reasons. I don't think many people know about it. Mm. And two, I didn't talk about it. So that was on me, you know. Even if my therapist was in SLA themselves, they wouldn't have been able to signpost me towards it, because I didn't give them the signs that that's what I needed.
Really interesting. I have to postpone the question I was going to ask you, because you mentioned when you were 19, tragically, you had a real period of difficulties. What helped you at that time? Were there any particular organisations that were particularly useful to you?
The big one for me was Off the Record in Bristol. So they did, I very much aged out of that service now, and also, you know, I'm not in Bristol anymore, but they were fantastic. They did six sessions, I think, of talking therapy for free, but they also had kind of like drop-in sessions for group work and kind of like understanding your mental health coming from, I guess, a CBT perspective. Yeah, they were absolutely fantastic at that time, especially as a young person. Yeah.
There are several things we're going to have to put in the program notes that you missed. Yeah. Kate, carry on.
I was just going to say, Livvy, if you came across a person with your difficulties at this point in time, which way would you point them? What would you say to them?
I mean, I would obviously signpost them towards SLART. So I think that I can't remember their website off the top of my head, but
slauk.org. slauk.org.
That's the one, thank you. So I would signpost them towards that. We have like newcomer packs at our meetings as well, which are free, so it's always a good idea to just have a look at that. There's a 40 question checklist for self-diagnosis as well, and I think it's like if you've got over 20 or not even that, I think you tick them off and see if SLAR might be the place for you. And then on top of that, we recommend that you go to 6 meetings to see if it's for you before making a decision as to whether to come into the program and before looking for a sponsor, etc.
Are those meetings virtual or do you have to go face-to-face?
Both. During the pandemic, obviously, they were all online, so quite a few of them are still going online. On Zoom, there's one that's great. It's worldwide. I think it's, I want to say 8 p.m. till 9:30 every single day. That's the one I started on. I actually had COVID when I first came into SLAR. So I had a week of just being at home. So I just did all my 6 meetings in 1 week, which was great. And I just, looking back and just remembering, just crying my eyes out, and then being like, oh, this is exactly where I need to be. And like now I'm not crying about things anymore. I'm feeling recovered. So, yeah.
Can I just pick up the thing that was occurring to me earlier, if I may? One thing we have to do in life when something happens is we have to forgive. And we have to forgive three ways. We have to forgive the event. We have to forgive the other person. But the biggest and most difficult one is forgiving ourselves for the way we've acted and for the way we feel. I don't know what you think about that.
Yeah, absolutely. That is, I'd say that's the core of the program, to be honest. So step four is you take inventory. So you take inventory on resentments, fear, and sexual conduct. And I think, to be honest, that the resentments are, I guess, other people's actions, what they've already done. Fear is what you're afraid that could happen. And then sexual conduct is yourself, is taking responsibility for what you've done. So you do that for step four, and then step five, you share it with someone else. And the power in sharing it with someone else is incredible. Obviously, getting it off your chest. And I think that's what I was missing, to be honest, throughout, like, because I just hadn't ever shared it with a therapist or with a friend or anyone. So that's huge. And then I'm on step 10 right now. And that's you take daily inventory. So if you're feeling instant kind of resentment or if someone's triggered you, you write it down, share it with your sponsor rather than responding to it or reacting to it. And then you do it at the end of the day, just before you go to bed, and you just get it out. You just get it out in order to, forgive.
And this is just such useful information that we need to make sure more people are aware of. Because certainly until we spoke to you, I'd not even heard of SLAR. This is really helpful. We've only got a few minutes left. Is there anything else that you want to talk about, Livvy, that we haven't covered?
I don't think there's anything so much that I want to talk about, but I do want to say that if there's one takeaway from this is there is no shame in sharing it. And coming into the program and talking to other people who feel the same and have experienced similar things to me, and some of them won't, some of them will have experienced very different things, but you can learn from all of it. You know, hearing that people going through panic attacks, people going through suicidal thoughts, self-harm, obsession, you know, controlling behaviors, and being in a place where they want to change that is incredible.
Thank you. Andrew, any last minute questions?
I was just to say thank you so much, Livy, for being so honest and sharing with us and so open. And good luck on your journey. They say every day is a school day. Well, it certainly feels like that to me, and I've certainly learned a lot from you today. But we're all on our journey learning in life.
Thanks for having me.
You're welcome. To all our listeners, go well.
Thank you.